Welcome. You're listening to Women's Health and Beyond with Dr. David Goslin, the only podcast for women providing a physician's point of view on everything relating to women's health, sexual medicine, and cosmetic gynecology. Get ready to discover the latest and hottest topics in women's health and how they relate to you.
This is Dr. David Goslin. Welcome to my podcast with Women's Health and Beyond. I'm honored today to have a colleague of mine and a good friend, Dr. Ron Gadd. He's a PhD. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. He practices in Beverly Hills and owns the Beverly Hills Therapy Group. Today, we're going to talk about two topics. Initially, when I first contacted Ron to join us, we were going to talk about coping mechanisms and tools that he recommends in coping with the worries and stress of this pandemic and how it's increased so many issues for so many people, from alcohol use to insomnia to anxiety. But the second half of what I want to focus with Dr. Gadd is the fact that we are in a stage. I'm in isolation. We're all partially isolating at this point, but the good news is we're actually starting the phases of reopening our cities. And I think that's going to bring a whole other ballgame of anxieties that I want Dr. Gadd to help us cope with. Welcome to the show. Dr. Gadd, are you there?
Yeah, great to be here.
Can I call you Ron moving forward?
Yeah, please do.
So Ron, tell me a little bit about you. Give us some background so we get to know you and get a feel for you. And then let's jump right into it.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited about today. Well, quickly about me, this is actually my second career. I used to be in business and working in jewelry design and manufacture, and actually came to a point in my life where I realized that that wasn't as fulfilling for me as I'd like it to be, and just switched into the world of psychology, and with the goal of helping other people connect to who they really are and what is most fulfilling to them in a way that I was lucky enough to do. So I find myself here now, really doing that, surrounding myself with people and helping people find their most true selves and what makes them the happiest people they can be.
That's great. I never knew that about you, Ron. Ron, we all know that this pandemic has caused all of us some issues in some form, but for some of us, these issues have been really pronounced during these times of quarantine and isolation. I know as a medical physician in my practice, I am seeing a lot of patients asking me what they can do because they're having difficulty sleeping at night, especially in the evenings. I think during the day they're trying to keep busy, but when things wind down with the kids at home or they're done doing their virtual work, that their anxiety seems to kick in a little bit more. They're drinking alcohol a lot more, they're eating more, and they're having a difficult time. Tell us about what you're seeing in your practice, and maybe you can just, and you can speak freely, and I'll just stop you if we need to. What you're recommending people do, maybe some tools you can give us on how to cope with these.
Sure. We are seeing a lot of that. So many people are put in a position now where they are left to their own, left to themselves in their own environment, both physically in their own apartment or home, and also in their own head because there's so much time. And really, even starting first thing in the morning, especially when this first started, people would wake up at 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning and think, oh my gosh, I've got 12, 15 hours ahead of me. What am I supposed to do? The thing that I think is most important for everybody is routine. You know, when you're going to work every day, whether you know it or not, you've got a routine. You know, you get up, you brush teeth, you get dressed, you eat, you go, you have your day. And in your work day, it's also routine. It's set out for you. When we're quarantined, there's a little bit of a different setup, but things aren't as structured and the day feels daunting. So what I really highly suggest to everybody is schedule it out. So it doesn't look like one big open emptiness that you need to fill, but they're very strategic, accomplishable tasks and goals that you can have for your day. And if you are busy throughout the day with work or kids, then the evening seems somewhat like that as well, open. And I would find ways to try and structure your day, your evening, the same way that you structure the day. Dinner, calls to friends, and that's a big one, connecting with people. You know, when we quarantine, when we isolate, you know, we're literally feeling isolated. We're literally isolating, and we're certainly feeling isolated. And thankfully, this is happening today with modern technology, where we can connect via video chats and things like that, where you can have a dinner and get a friend on the other end who's also having a dinner, and you can just share those times while not physically sitting at the same table. You can at least digitally be sitting and sharing a meal with someone. And while it's not exactly the same, it's certainly one step closer to feeling separate and alone. And loneliness really leads to so many other challenges that we face internally. Our head spins, we think about all the negative things in our life. But if you can connect and share any way possible, you know, those feelings you'll find will whittle away quite a bit.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I have to say, we are in a way lucky to be in this digital era, because Zoom meetings with video, FaceTime, you're right. These have been instrumental for so many people in keeping their sanity, keeping economic in order to continue to work and hold meetings. You know, I know people celebrating birthdays, that has been really tough and challenging, especially if they have kids who have birthdays. Thank goodness we're able to actually see them. I know we just celebrated a Jewish holiday, and it was so nice to actually include my parents and my siblings through Zoom meetings, and that was beautiful. Ron, let me ask you, one of the dilemmas I'm seeing a lot is people using alcohol as an escape route, who maybe were so, you know, drinkers of once or twice a week and social drinking, but now are drinking on a daily basis because they have nothing else to do. As a physician, that really concerns me because of the negative drawbacks on your body with alcohol. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see an increase in obesity and secondary diseases related to alcohol at a higher prevalency than we normally would have seen. What can you recommend in order to sustain mental health? Because all of these things may feel good on the spot, but they certainly take away from your good energy, your positivity. These are all depressants at the end of the day.
Yeah, this is a great point, David. And, you know, there's this Canadian psychiatrist, Gabor Maté is his name. And he writes a lot and has written a ton about addiction and the purpose it serves for people. He really painted, I think, a perfect picture years and years ago that's more and more prevalent today, with that the fact that I think you mentioned it, addiction and devices like this are their escapes, you know. And what Maté had said was that there's an emptiness inside that we feel, and almost a hole in ourselves. And to fill that hole, people tend to act out, either by drinking, you know, addictive behaviors or addictive thoughts and patterns. And whether it's using substances or any other kind of addictive eating, overeating, sexual stuff, all these things fill that hole. They fill the emptiness. And the reality of those kinds of things is that they're fleeting. So we eat something and it fills our hole as we are eating it, or we drink a little extra, or we smoke a little extra, and it fills it for the moment. But it not only does it eventually, you know, fade out the bottom, you know, but it actually expands that hole. So as we fill with a little extra alcohol or a little extra food, it actually expands the emptiness that we feel. And so we need to do that a little bit more and do that a little bit more often. And so the best thing that we can do is really try and make sense of what that emptiness is, what that hole is about for us, because it's a little different for everybody, right? Is it because I'm lonely? Is it because I feel I'm worried about my job? Is it because I feel like I'm a little bit older and I'm missing out on my grandkids right now? You know, I have to be isolated. I have to be extra careful because I'm in a high risk age bracket. And so I'm missing out on time with my grandkids that I'll never get back again. And once we come to make sense of what is the emptiness, what is causing the hole, you know, we can do what we need to do to fill it more with more nourishing substances. You know, if it's time with other people, then we get on some video chats, or we figure out ways to drive by their house and hang out, you know, 6 feet apart. But what we don't want to do is just fill in isolation and fill with substances that will expand the hole rather than nourish it.
I agree. I mean, I think, Ron, it's hard to do because it's much easier at 5 p.m. when you think it's happy hour to just say, okay, I'm done. Let's have a couple margaritas and let the numbing take effect. I think it's more challenging but more rewarding to give yourself, just like you do a routine during the day and you put your to-do list. Maybe you have a physical activity to-do list that you must accomplish every day, socializing, like you mentioned, and I think putting together accomplishments, to-dos on a mental wellness focus is extremely important. My question, I'm going to shift it a little because I know our time is a little bit limited. We've been in isolation now for over 6 weeks, although I've started working and I've been doing emergency visits when needed. I've been home. It's unnatural for me to be home every day of the week. It's, as much as I love it, it's not customary for me to see my children all day, trying to help them with homeschooling, or seeing my spouse all day, every day. How do you deal with the challenges, and what do you recommend couples do in order? I mean, this is a really strange time for couples because you're starting to see them in different facets that you may not be used to. And you may realize for some that, wow, I don't even know this person, or she's a little different than what I expected, or he's a little different than I expected. Well, how do you recommend couples deal with their relationship in order to continue to find moments for themselves?
Yeah, this is a very real thing. No matter what the relationship was like before, there was undoubtedly some separation and some sense of self. And that's, in my opinion, the most important thing to maintain is a sense of self. You know, couples that blend and merge into one have a really hard time because individually you really need your own identity and your own space and your own energy. And when we're faced with a pandemic like this and a requirement to isolate and quarantine with our partners and with our families, on the one hand, it's unbelievable. I mean, I've spent a kind of time with my family that I had never really been able to spend before. And it was eye-opening for me to see my kids and my wife interact in a way that I hadn't seen before. And on the other hand, you know, we realize, whoa, we've spent a lot of time together, and aggravation builds and frustration builds, and with external worries about money and about what society is going to be like and about whether or not school is going to start again, you know, those things tend to lash out at our partners. And the best thing to do, quite honestly, is one, try and find a little space. And everybody's initially, you know, the initial response is there is no space, there is no time, we're quarantined. There always is space, and there always is time for yourself, whether it's a walk around the block or just being in another room or on the other end of the couch. Time for self is extremely important, because right now, you might not get it if you're connected with somebody all the time, and it's important to have. The other end of that spectrum is just communication, you know, being able to talk about what is going well, what is frustrating, what you're feeling. The most successful couples are the ones that are able to talk about how they're feeling and how they, in what ways they need support. Sometimes they just want to, you know, sometimes we just need to be listened to and hugged, and other times we want some help working things out. And the best thing we can do for our partners is to let them know which one we need right now. And so stay connected, share what you need, and then also get a little time for yourself, because it's so, so important.
So let me ask you some therapeutic advice. Because normally, I'll give you an example in my life. I usually leave the house early. I come home on the later side. So there's a big chunk of my day that is spent by myself, interacting with other patients or colleagues. And I have my own time, my own little life. Now I'm home. What do you recommend? Maybe give me some tools or some advice on how I can approach my wife and start communicating in a way, even if I'm feeling frustrated and a little bit angry or claustrophobic. What are some good bridge points that I can make with her in order to get my point across in these difficult times?
Yeah, well, there are these two psychologists up in Washington State, Doctors John and Julie Gottman. They're a married couple. They studied couples for decades now. And they have researched the longevity of couples and what allows, what they've seen, what patterns they've seen that have led to couples' sustained relationships. And what they realized was basically couples that have lasted a really long time and through difficult times, which is now, which would include now, is three things. One is to reminisce, to talk about old times, both good and bad, even the bad times, because talking about old bad times reminds you that you can get through them. But just to reminisce about old experiences that you've had. The second is a nice kiss or embrace every day. Not just a peck on the cheek or a peck hello and goodbye, but really a nice moment of intimacy, whether it's a nice kiss or a nice hug. And if couples can do that every day, that would be, you know, really helpful for the connection. And then the third, which I think is probably the most important and also probably the most difficult to maintain, is the space for each member, the space for each partner to share their feelings. So what the Gottmans talk about is about 15 minutes a day each for a couple to sit and just to share their feelings. This is not really conversational, more experiential. I want you to experience what I'm feeling. So for the next 5, 10, 15 minutes, I'm just going to talk to you about my day, how I felt, what I was going through. And yeah, you can ask a question here or there, but it's really not meant for a conversation. It's meant for you to understand me and for me to understand you. And that opens the door for a lens into your partner and a partner to be able to view you in a way that they can't possibly do if you're not sharing. So during these difficult times, and really forever and always, if you can, try and do those three things.
I love those 3 points. Very, very well. Ron, let's talk about kids and the frustration that a lot of parents are going through. I know we are sometimes having a difficult time with kids because homeschooling, we're not teachers, and we're trying to do our own work, and all of a sudden we're being thrown into this environment where we're supposed to be teachers. How do you, and it's the patience isn't there. It's maybe it's not a learned thing. What are your recommendations for parents dealing with children who are also feeling anxious and resentful and all these other feelings that's going through their heads and dealing with the whole family dynamics?
Yeah, this is very prevalent right now, and really important for parents to work their way through. And I'd say, first and foremost, the absolute most important thing to realize is nobody can do it all, and nobody needs to do it all, right? We're not teachers. Our homes are not set up in the same way. Our kids are not in the same state of mind when they're at home as they would be at school. So to expect your kids or yourself to get through everything, all the assignments and all the expectations, is too much pressure on yourself and on your kids. So really the main thing I would say is nobody's doing it all. Nobody has to do it all. Cut yourself some slack. And that's going to help everything else trickle through. And the other thing that I would suggest, really just two things. Don't expect to do it all. And the other is schedule. Kids need structure and they need a schedule. And the more you can schedule them, even if you're scheduling a bunch of free time in between snacks and food and Zoom class, and then they appreciate that and they need that, especially the younger they are, the more structure they need. But even as kids get older into junior high and high school, to try and structure out that day for them is going to really help maintain a semblance of order and normalcy in a time that's anything but.
Exactly. And we've talked about this on the show before. I, for example, make a to-do list every day for the last 20 years. And I have continued to do that every morning during this pandemic. Although my to-do list has gotten very thin these days, it's there. And it's there for a reason, because it keeps me grounded. It keeps me routined. And you're right. It's. I think in the beginning we were overwhelmed with children. I think a lot of us and the parents that I've spoken to in our classes feel the same way, which is at the end of the day, we just want our kids to be happy. We want them to be as normal as possible and come through this okay. And we do our best, and that's all that we can expect from each other. We'll catch up on all the schoolwork when in the right time.
Yeah, and that's, if I can jump in, that's really important to understand. The plus side to all this is all the kids are in the same boat. So when they do finally get back into school, whatever that's going to look like, they're all going to really be in the same place, So we can't be too hard on ourselves. We can't be too hard on our kids. We just have to get through this the best way that we can, and try and have some fun. Try and, go on some parent boards, or, find some ideas on all these platforms on Pinterest and Facebook and Instagram, and try and see what other parents are doing with their kids to help engage them spiritually and artistically and educationally, because there are lots of ways out there. Our best role models are other parents, and we can just learn from each other and make it happen. And it doesn't have to be so intense. It doesn't have to be so overwhelming. And just remember, everybody, when we get back to school, whenever that is, everyone's going to be in the same boat. So we're not going to be behind.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought all those points up. Vivid dreams. We're all having them. So many of us are waking up in the morning I've turned to my wife so many times and said, I can't believe the dream I had last night. It was absolutely wild. Bring that up to me from a therapeutic, from a therapy sense, from a therapy point of view.
Yeah, I'll tell you, my wife wakes up half the time mad at me for something that I did in her dream. So you're, well, listen, I come from a world of psychology that really believes in and embraces the unconscious. And all the unconscious really is things that we're feeling and experiencing that we're not really necessarily mindful of or aware of right in the moment. And the best window into our soul and into our unconscious are our dreams. So what you're experiencing in these dreams, and whether they're overnight dreams or daydreams, are things that you're really feeling. And really the best way to try and make sense of them is to share them. You know, the fact that you wake up and you talk to your wife about the dreams, or you can get on the phone or on a video chat with a friend and say, you won't even believe this dream I had, and really try and get into the details. For me as a therapist, one of the things I do very often and really love to do is help people explore their dreams and what the symbols and meanings are within the characters that show up in the dreams. I'm not a literalist, so I personally don't really approach dreams as though everything is really literal and every person and everything in the dream is what it is in my real life. So I try and help people symbolically go through their dreams. What does that person mean to you, and how might that be relevant in your life right now, for example? So I would just embrace the dreams and talk about them, because from my school of psychology, a dream is a part of the unconscious that's trying to become conscious. There's something that you're experiencing or feeling that you're not really aware of in your day-to-day, but your body wants you to know about it. So sure, the more you talk about it, the more you'll be able to make sense of it, and probably the less intense the dreams will feel, because you're giving them the space, you're giving them the voice.
Absolutely. And I brought that up because I think it's a real thing during this pandemic. People are having these wild and vivid dreams. So what kind of tools do you recommend if I'm I'm home, the kids are home, things are getting a little redlining for me, and I'm feeling a little overwhelmed? Are there breathing techniques, meditations, tools that you recommend I can just take a time out?
Yeah, well, if anybody is able to meditate, you know, there's something about mindfulness, there's something about being present and calming yourself. I think that that's certainly something that you should be able to do. There are some great resources for apps that are very introductory that can really work you into meditating, guided meditations, as opposed to you trying to have to clear your head yourself. And I would take those and incorporate that into some of your alone time, because that's very important. And that might help set the stage for the day if you can do that in the morning, and then kind of help you wind down in the evening. The other thing I'd say about the evening, especially if people are having trouble sleeping, is a really solid bedtime routine. You know, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z before bed every night, no matter what. You know, I'm going to have a cup of tea, I'm going to brush my teeth, I'm going to this third thing, right? And if you do that every night, then we're creatures of habits. Our body will start to realize, I'm doing that thing, I'm having that tea, I'm brushing my teeth, it must be time to wind down, and it must be time to go to bed. And if we end up having a hard time falling asleep. We shouldn't just sit and toss and turn for half hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours. So if you realize that you're not falling asleep in the time that you really want, if you're in bed for 10, 15, 20 minutes and you're not falling asleep, then the best thing to do is to get up and repeat the last step or two of your bedtime routine. You know, brush your teeth again, read that story, read your book again. And what you're doing is you're telling your body that you're getting back into that zone. You're going back into sleep mode. And because we're creatures of habit, because for the last 3, 5, 20 nights, I've done these three things right before bed, if I get up and I do one or two of those things again, it's going to remind myself that it's time for bed, and we're going to try over a little reset, and it should really help you out.
Yeah, one of the things my wife does routinely every night, and I've tried it, but my problem is I fall asleep too fast, is she listens to an app called Calm for about a half an hour while she's trying to relax and just unwind in bed. And it really helps her stay asleep. It really helps her sort of process her day and allows her to go into that zone. You know, there's so many things that we've learned from ourselves, from our families, like you've said, that, you know, watching your wife interact with your children. For me, there's been so many silver linings to this pandemic, although there's been so many sad and horrible things that have come out of this as well. But we're glad, thankfully, we're starting to move to phase two, which is really starting to reopen our cities. Here in Los Angeles, today is May 6th, 2020, was just announced that we are going to reopen our city in phases starting this coming Monday. I know for me personally, that's going to be an area of anxiety, because what feels like an eternity now since early March, we've done everything we possibly can to protect ourselves from the outside. And now all of a sudden, somebody on television is telling us, no, it's okay now. Let's put down those barriers and let's start coming back into our normal routines and bringing our cities back. How are you going to tell your patients? Because I know for me, there is anxiety in that, anxiety in going to restaurants or movie theaters, and forget about thinking about sports arenas at this time or concerts. Do you have any suggestions on how we can cope with these things, given that we've sort of caved ourselves for this long?
Yeah, this is a really interesting concept, I think, because even for the last, 6 weeks, 2 months, there's been this uncertainty around the actual virus, what caused it, how it spread, those kinds of things. But there's been a very clear certainty about what we should do. Whether people are doing it or not is a different story, but it's been very clear. Stay at home, limit your contact, wear a mask, those kinds of things. There's something that we've all known about this. Now, as we get into this rolling out phase, there's going to be a lot more uncertainty person to person, because there's this, there's what the government officials are telling us we can do and what they're trying to do. And then there's the personal feelings that we have about whether or not we really feel comfortable about doing those things. And let's be honest, the city, the state, this country, they have to balance human safety and the economic issues that happen if we're closed for too long. So they're going to open with hopefully both things in mind, but it's going to put us at a little bit of a different phase of uncertainty. The best thing that I can recommend for people is to follow the guidelines to the extent that you feel comfortable.
I love that. I was going to say exactly that.
Yeah. And if you're not comfortable, you don't need to do it. Don't go beyond the guidelines that health officials and others are telling us that we should do, but you don't need to go to the extent to the full extent of those guidelines.
Especially if you're a high-risk individual, if you have a comorbid disease or are in the elderly population, what Ron is saying is absolutely true.
Yeah.
Follow your gut.
Sorry. The other thing is, I was going to say, and especially if you are an anxious person, it's okay to be anxious and to know that that's something that affects you. And if you're going to push the boundaries, your anxiety is going to increase. And it's there isn't much that's worth that.
Absolutely. So, as a therapist, what do you see as we start to come out as some of the major probably pitfalls or issues people are going to have going back to normal routine life as far as their relationships, work, all that?
Well, I think there's going to be a bit of an uncertainty and a confusion over what we can do and what we want to do. I mean, we might find ourselves in a position where we want to see someone, but they don't want to see us, or someone wants to see us, but we don't want to see them. And there might be some relational issues that come up as a result of it. There might be some professional issues that come up as a result of it, that our boss wants us to do something that we don't want to do. And so we're going to be faced with a lot of discomfort that, you know, just on the relational aspect of things, let's leave the work thing aside, just on the relational aspect of things, if I want to see a friend and that friend isn't ready, you know, there's a part of me that understands that logically, but inevitably there's a part of me that is insecure, we all are, and that wonders, wow, do they not want to see me because they don't like me, or because they don't think I'm careful, or because they think that I could be a risk to them? And there's a part of us that might take that personally. And that's sure. Something that I would for sure be mindful of and really try and work through, be open with your close friends about, and try as hard as possible not to be affected and to allow those kinds of things to really strain your sense of self, because that's all we have is our self-esteem and our sense of self. And this is something that can really, really affect that.
Ron, a lot of people have been seeing therapists, and during these times they stopped, and it's starting to affect them. What is your practice doing to help people continue their therapy sessions, and what do you recommend people do?
Yeah, well, it's a interesting time because people, what we and most other therapists around have the luxury of doing are telehealth. So, sessions on the phone or video sessions where we can still try and be that steady hour a week that you go to and connect and unload and process. Some people feel like they can't do it as well. They don't feel as comfortable. So they've discontinued because they just let me know when the office is open and I'll come back in then. And other people are really worried financially. I don't know how long my job is going to last. I can't afford this. You know, all these things are real things. The best thing that I can suggest that you do is push your boundaries a little bit as far as the digital aspect of things. Try it. Even if this is your first time, especially if it's a therapist that you've been seeing for a while, it's a little different, maybe uncomfortable the first time or two, but then it's just the way it is, and it's still beneficial. And if you've never done it before, then you don't even know the difference. So you may as well give it a try. And as far as the finances go, there are lots of opportunities. There are lots of places that have specific sessions available for lower fee. There are different companies that have all kinds of things, plus your insurance companies although it's a little bit hard to find therapists on insurance panels, they do exist. So, you know, if it's in your means, do it, even though it's not ideal. And then eventually you'll be able to ease back in. I mean, thankfully, most therapists have, you know, low traffic in their buildings, certainly in their offices. And ideally, some have big enough office spaces where you can sit 6 feet apart. So hopefully within the next little while, who knows, month or two or sooner, you know, you'll be able to go back into the offices. I mean, we're going to be cautious and judicious about it, but we want to offer our clients a place to process and experience what they need to experience, whether it's on the phone or in video or when it's safe and appropriate in person.
Absolutely. And very good points. I agree with all of those. I have found most interesting is that I would say most people today know every sign and symptom that we know about when it comes to COVID-19. And every day, as soon as you open the internet, whatever website you're on, you're going to see a discussion about the signs and symptoms of COVID-19. What we're not seeing a lot, or at least I'm not seeing a lot, is a lot of mental health discussion in relation, in response to COVID-19. And really, you know, as we start to wind down and reopen our cities and go back to quote unquote normal life, I think we're going to have a real secondary wave of mental wellness that's going to have to be addressed. This has affected a lot of us emotionally and perhaps scarred us emotionally. And so I look forward to seeing what society will do to help those in need and suffering mentally at this time. And Ron, I'm so happy that, you know, you and your group are very proactive in telehealth and trying to continue the therapy and the good work that you're doing with your clients. And we all look forward to this being over. I want to ask you any words of advice or take home messages that you have for the audience?
The only thing I like to say today and really always is just listen to your body and listen to your feelings. You know, if something doesn't feel comfortable and doesn't feel right, don't do it. You know, and if you're feeling anxiety or you're feeling sadness, all those things are normal and okay to feel. Everything that you're feeling, you're supposed to be feeling. And so embrace it, own it, you know, try and work through it, of course, but don't feel less than or anything else negative about things that you're feeling. If you're feeling it, you're supposed to be feeling it.
That's right. Your inner voice is always right, in my opinion.
That's right.
Ron, I want to thank you. I want you to tell us a little bit about how people can find you, they can reach you, about your practice. I know you have a big group that you've put together. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, thanks, David. Well, we are the Beverly Hills Therapy Group. We're right in Beverly Hills in a mixed residential area, which really allows for, you know, once we're back into the swing of in-person visits, a nice quiet environment. And we've got 10 therapists, all that really specialize in different things. And that's something that I feel that is really important with therapy is finding a therapist who really understands what you're experiencing, where you come from, and what you want to work on. And we, you know, we're a small boutique practice with individual therapists that really do a great job in specializing and continuing their training and hyper-focusing on helping a certain kind of person. So, you know, here we'd like to talk to you, see what's going on, see where you come from, what you're experiencing, how it's affecting you. And I think we do a really good job of matching you with someone who would be your ideal therapist. And not just someone who is a therapist who has some time in his or her schedule, which I don't think is as advantageous. And it usually leads for greater work and a more sustained kind of healing process for whatever you're going through. And,
So I see on your website, you have something, you have free consultation. What is that? Is that your opportunity to try and match the right person to the right therapist?
Yeah. So I often do a lot of those consultations, or if you're on the website, which is therapyinbeverlyhills.com, and you find a therapist that you feel resonates with you, then you can get in touch with that therapist directly. But usually what we do is we find a good 20, 30, 45 minutes where we can talk on the phone and really have like an initial session. What are you feeling? What's it look like? How's it been affecting your life? And you can tell me, for example, if I'm doing that session with you, you can tell me what's been happening. I can tell you how I think therapy would work to help you. And by doing that, you can get a sense of how you feel about working with us. We can get a sense of whether or not we think we're the right fit for you. Because like I said, fit is everything. We don't just match our therapists up with people because they have the time. We do it because we feel like we're going to be the best person to help them. And if we're not, we have a lot of colleagues in the city and in the area that we'll refer out to. And so our free consultation session is just about that, you know, getting a sense of one another, seeing how we can work together. And because we have such a relatively large group, there are different people who are at different levels of training and licensure and things like that. So we're seeing clients here at the practice, sometimes as low as $60 a session, up to some of the more seasoned, experienced clinicians who charge $250 and $300 a session. And depending on where you are financially and schedule-wise and what you'd like to work on, there's always someone who is going to be a good fit for you. Like I said, either here in the practice or one of our trusted colleagues that for sure can help.
Thank you for that. Dr. Ron Gad, you're the best. I thank you for your tips and advice on this, how to cope with this pandemic and reopening of our cities, because I know that's stressful as well. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, David. It was a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Women's Health and Beyond with Dr. David Goslin. If you found this episode informative, be sure to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to ask Dr. Goslin a question, please visit our website at www.davidgoslin.com or connect on all social media platforms at David Goslin. We'll see you next week for another episode.